Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 800. It's the 13th of June 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources at KRS, and Dave explains today's news, which is the allotment of shares in Calidus Resources, the entity through which the company's Australian gold assets are being listed on the ASX. Plus, João Andrade, CEO of Widecells, WGC, and Alan Greenberg, Non-Executive Director of Widecells Group and Senior Vice President of Wide Academy. And today, together, they discuss Wide Academy's strategic update. Plus, I also have Bonnie Hughes, Mining Specialist at Northland Capital Partner, talking about Tethys Petroleum, TPL, and Bellzone Mining. And today's suggested one for your watchlist is from Afsal. It's Petroneft, PTR. Don't forget, anything you hear in this podcast is just information. It is not intended as investment advice. And so I'll go through the reasons why Afsal reckons you should add Petroneft to your watchlist in a bit. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources. That's KRS ticker. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Morning. Now, you've got a release out today, and I've been reading through it, and it takes a bit of concentration to understand exactly what's going on. But you are going to explain it for us in a few minutes. But before we get into that, let's first get a summary as to what Keras is all about, please, Dave, if you would.
For sure. So Keras is a diversified mining development company. We've got exposure to the safe haven of gold through what happened today and our shareholding in Calidus Resources, which will be listing on the ASX, and also exposure to the exciting growth market of batteries through our cobalt and manganese licenses in Togo.
Okay, excellent stuff. So today you announced the allotment of shares in Calidus Resources. So explain what, for the layman, let's say someone who's new to investing now, this is going to be a challenge for you, Dave. Explain what's happened here, Dave.
Okay, so obviously, yes, it's been quite a process to get where we were today. And essentially what happened today is everything in that ownership of our gold assets transferred to Calidus. We got appointed to the board of Calidus. The shares in Calidus were allotted back to us, as in Keras. We repaid loans. So everything that we needed to do to complete the transaction happened today. We now need to get all the final documents circled up from all the bits and pieces that happened today into the ASX for final approval, and then the Calidus shares begin trading on the ASX.
Excellent stuff. And so, to explain to people, Calidus is your vehicle for these gold assets in Australia, aren't they?
That is correct. So we've raised just under $8 million so that we can repay some debt and advance this project aggressively. And the way we did that was to list it on the ASX. We have a major shareholding in that, and that shareholding increases as the project is de-risked by increased ounces and pre-feasibility. So we'll be the major shareholder in that. But it was a way of raising a substantial amount of money to enable us to rapidly progress what we think is a very exciting project.
Excellent stuff. And okay, talking about that project, so what's next in that project, Dave?
We will be drilling, and we'll get an announcement out on that very shortly, I'm sure. And the aim there is to increase resources, not just in size, but in confidence from the inferred to indicated category. That allows us to start putting economics around those deposits with a view to developing in the midterm.
Excellent stuff. And as far as your five sort of cobalt and nickel licenses in Togo, what's going on there at the moment?
So we've commenced exploration on the cobalt. You know, that takes a bit of time to generate results, but we should be able to announce in the not too distant future some of the work that's going on there. And we continue our very, very active discussions on the manganese in northern Togo. So hopefully we'll have some more news on that shortly.
Yeah, and I noticed an article you put from Mining a Journal about, it says, demand for cobalt shows no signs of abating. And this is going to be, I assume now, with the way we're headed with the industry and with electric cars and all this stuff, and the need for more batteries and all kinds of, sort of products, this is going to continue, isn't it, this demand for cobalt?
Oh, look, it is. And I caught up some guys who... I've spent the last week in Europe and some of these battery conferences, and it's only positive news. You know, I think people have underdone the demand side for the batteries, because we all talk about EVs, but no one's really talking about the static battery market, you know, taking people off grid, housing, etc.
Yeah.
And to me, that really hasn't been factored in. And when you start to put all of that together, I just think the future there over the next decade is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. Okay, excellent stuff. Well, Dave, you know the score here. If anyone's listening and they like the areas you're operating in and what you're doing there, but they're not following you as yet, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, on your page on Vox Markets?
Sure. So from a goal perspective, we're about to begin a very aggressive drilling program to expand resources in Australia through our exposure to Calidus Resources. Lots of news flow coming from there. We have commenced exploration on the cobalt licenses in Togo, so news flow there. And thirdly, discussions are progressing very well on manganese, and we hope for further news flow there. So three very good reasons.
Excellent. Dave, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Andrade, a CEO of Wide Cells, and Alan Greenberg, non-executive director of Wide Cells Group and senior vice president of Wide Academy. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Good morning, and thank you for having us.
Yes, well, you've got a bit of news out today, a strategy update on Wide Academy. We'll get to that in a bit. But, Joe, briefly, could you give us... you know, a summary of the business, please, for people new to Wide Cells.
Yeah, so Wide Cells Group, we are a worldwide provider of stem cell services. We've been we're the first company in the world to provide what we call an end-to-end services solution within the stem cell industry. And basically what that means is we are able to store a baby's umbilical cord blood to protect the family against future illnesses. And that's a service that we are able to provide using our laboratory facilities at the University of Manchester. And we can provide that service not only in the UK, but we are looking to provide it also throughout Europe in the upcoming months. We have also developed the world's first stem cell insurance plan. Basically, stem cell treatments are within the highest priced treatments in the medical marketplace. There are more than 80 diseases, mainly blood cancers, that can be treated using using umbilical cord blood stem cells. That's the reason why a family will freeze their baby's umbilical cord blood. And these treatments can cost up to £300,000. There's around 3 million people globally that have already stored or frozen that baby's umbilical cord blood and do not have an insurance to cover for the cost associated with treatment, and we provide that. The other element that we are involved is in educating the market in stem cell technology, the diseases it can treat, who are the medical teams involved, where are the treatment centers, and all of that in easy and digestible form, so that we can inform the market globally on the benefits of stem cell technology.
Marvellous. Okay, well, today you announced a Wide Academy strategic update and your recent expanding cell plans global reach. But in what manner is the success of Wide Cells predicated on that of Wide Academy and vice versa? What I'm saying is, basically, what is the relationship between Wide Academy and Wide Cells?
Okay, so let's see. Within the investor community, and if we think about even our audience today, the matter of the fact or the reality is, sometimes I hear within the investor community, investors saying that perhaps the stem cell industry is a niche industry. But in reality, the stem cell industry today is worth around $100 billion. Well, yeah. We cannot say that $100 billion is a niche industry anymore. So, and that's just pure of, that's just lack of information. Mm-hmm. And also, that's another thing that I often hear is that stem cell technology is a new technology. Well, a bone marrow transplant is a stem cell transplant performed following high-dose chemotherapy for cancer. And it has been used as a routine treatment for more than 50 years now. There's obviously a lot of research, especially in regenerative medicine using stem cells, regenerating skin, regenerating the heart, muscle following a stroke, and many other types of treatments. And there's just lack of information in the marketplace. So what happens with Wide Academy is the responsibility of bringing accurate scientific and medical information in a way that people can understand, including medical professionals as well.
Excellent. Okay. So in the strategic update today, and you've produced sort of a mandate for Wide Academy. Can you explain what it is? What's the mission statement? You know, describe your audience if you could, and what ambition you have here?
Yeah, well, I'll let Alan carry on and discuss the Wide Academy in more detail now.
Okay.
So let me try and give you some context here. I mean, I would argue that one of the challenges in this sector is to find both trusted and authentic content. And by trusted and authentic, I mean is that we can all search the web for information about our health, but how do we trust that content? How do we find things that are really authentic, that really are relevant to us and that we can use as a point of reference? And the mandate that Zhao's given me in Wide Academy is to build exactly that. So we will be building a number of different content channels, and I can discuss that in greater detail, but reaching out to three cohorts currently. So the first cohort we're looking at, if you think about it logically, every general practitioner, every doctor in practice today, not just in the UK, but worldwide, is unlikely to have any deep education into stem cell innovation. So we aim to help that GP practice, those doctors in surgeries, understand why stem cell innovation. Equally, I would argue, certainly the data suggests to us that stem cell teaching currently in medical schools and in universities is probably not as sophisticated and refined as it should be. So we'll be working with some major universities globally, both UK, US, and in China, to develop courseware and develop content that is relevant to the teaching of doctors, nurses, and midwives, also the next generation of the medical world. And that's cohort number one. Equally, we have a responsibility, if you accept that CellPlan is a highly innovative insurance product that is about to roll out globally, we need to support the insurance industry and the core blood banks themselves in being able to provide a deeper knowledge of what the innovation in stem cells is all about, and provide those insurance brokers with, again, a trusted and authentic repository of news and stories and information that supports them in their conversations with their customers. And the third cohort, which is also fairly obvious, is ultimately consumers. So families, young families, but also some of the older generation who might be buying a stem cell plan insurance policy for their children or grandchildren. They need to have, again, that trusted, authentic resource information, online resources, digital information that helps them make that decision and support that opportunity.
Okay, and so at the moment, currently, how do medical professionals and families access information on stem cell technology, and how will your model sort of improve on that?
Well, I mean, again, it's interesting. I was doing a piece of research with our technology team yesterday, and we were talking about the fact that a GP in the UK, or a doctor practicing in the UK currently, has a £2,000 budget a year for continual professional development or lifelong learning. How that is allocated is obviously the medical council will have some influence on the sort of things they want doctors to learn, but we will tap into those resources. We will tap into the continuing professional development and lifelong learning for doctors across the UK and equally globally. I would argue that the data I'm receiving suggests that whatever information is in circulation is not necessarily supported by deeper research. So it's all a matter of disseminating that research into readable, consumable, intuitive, accessible articles and features and information that help support that conversation and that deeper information in this sector.
Okay, excellent, Alan. Well, listen, it's been a while since you've been on, Alan, so it's worth reminding people a little bit about your background and how you intend to sort of leverage this to increase awareness in the stem cell sector, please, if you could.
So how long have I got? Are you going to give me a couple of hours?
Yeah, we've got a couple of days. Go for it.
Okay, well, the brief synopsis is, I mean, my background in history, I was privileged to work for a little company called Apple. I was the education director initially in Europe and then promoted, and I worked in Asia out of Beijing for a couple of years. So my team at Apple supported and built products like podcasting. I went to Cupertino recently and I met with some colleagues there recently, and I learned that the podcasting initiative has now had over 10 billion downloads. I needed to go to Wikipedia and find out how many zeros that was. For the uninitiated, that is a 10 plus 9 zeros, but proud to be someone who contributed and supported that initiative. The podcasting initiative grew into something called iTunes U, where the universities published their content into the globe. And again, this is a global initiative with thousands of universities. And I had a little bit of work that I did around the App Store and the first initiation of apps, and particularly in education and healthcare. So I grew a reputation in that area. Since then, since leaving Apple in 2010, I've worked with a portfolio of both education and healthcare technologies, working closely with venture capital and innovative companies on a global basis. So I have a little bit of experience in this area. I'm inspired by the gentleman sitting next to me and so excited about the opportunity to take on this challenge. I mean, to a certain extent, it's actually an easy challenge. It's actually not that difficult if you understand the disciplines, how people consume content digitally, and having the subject matter such as stem cells and the power that brings to the medical world is a wonderful challenge and something I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
And I also add, I'm privileged. He's given me the budget to actually build an extraordinary team. I brought on a colleague of mine who previously worked with Guardian Education Online, headed up the editorial team at The Independent, built digital diplomacy at the Foreign Commonwealth Office, and built 10 Downing Street's initial website environments. So I have a talented senior guy that's come in. I'm also bringing in two further people, one as a VP of education to run the academic and courseware side, and a VP of enterprise to look at training in terms of the core blood banks and insurance industry. So I'm the mechanic surrounded by some very clever people who are going to help us, support us, build this out and achieve the objectives that we've set for ourselves.
Okay, excellent. Well, you better mention that was the Jimmy Leach is now reading the article. Is that the person you brought on board amongst the other two people?
Yeah, I don't want to mention him by name in case his ego gets too boosted.
Okay, fair enough. There was a reason for that. It wasn't a mistake. Okay, all right.
Excellent. He's the brains behind the opportunity.
Yes, okay, but you don't want to let that brain grow too big. Okay.
No, don't mention that to any of your listeners.
I won't, definitely not. I'll cut that out then. All right, so where do you see Wide Academy? Let's take a couple of steps here, say 6 to 12 months, and then a longer term 12 months, and say further on to 18 months. So how do you see the development there?
Okay, I mean, that's a really good question. And again, it's a sensitive one, but I put you this way. I mean, we will deliver the content across a number of different applications. So there'll be software as a service, there will be apps, there'll be a number of different routes to market that, again, I don't particularly want to discuss the detail now, but I will tell you that we will focus initially on obviously English language, because that's obviously the language of the internet. But I can tell you without reservation, we will be in Spanish and Portuguese before you know it. We are already looking at Chinese and the Asian networks. So this is a global strategy and global impact. I mean, I would argue that this content may go deeper into the emerging markets than it might even in the English language speaking markets. But that's based on a little bit of experience of how things accelerate in the different worlds we live in, so the established markets and the emerging markets. But we have a strategy which is global, we have a multiple language strategy which is global, and we have an intention to bring this information to literally the world.
Excellent stuff. Well, that sounds hugely ambitious. And, of course, you're the man with a massive book of contacts there who has the ability to do that. Well, listen...
It's just my day job.
Exactly. All right. Well, listen, Zhao, you know what comes next. As always on Vox Markets, if someone's listening to this and they like the area you're involved in here, stem cell sector, and they see it as a potentially huge opportunity, but haven't yet hit that follow button on your page, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, I mentioned the industry is worth around $100 billion. It's expected to double or almost double in the next 5 years. It's one of the segments, the stem cell industry, that is growing more within the healthcare industry. And with the products that we are bringing to the table, innovative products such as CellPlan and the approach with Wide Academy, I strongly believe the market can grow even further. And we can take advantage of that growth. But more than just talking about the industry, it's talking about the patients that can benefit from the technologies that already exist and making them accessible and affordable for them. So anyone that joins this journey will ultimately be, it's a win-win situation for everyone involved. For the investor that invests in the company, for patients that benefit the technology, for the teams that work with us and all partners. So all in all, there's no leader within the stem cell industry today. There's no company leading the way. And I really believe that White Cells is the company who is emerging now, starting to do that.
Excellent. Zhao, Alan, thanks for chatting to me, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is the ever-positive, upbeat, always on it, Bonnie Hughes from Northland Capital Partners, mining specialist, I should say. Bonnie, happy Tuesday.
Oh, thank you, Justin. That was quite the introduction. I'm very flattered.
Yes. Is the sunshine?
You charm all the girls this way.
Oh, yeah, and the fellas. So is the weather nice where you are? Because it's quite nice where I am, you know?
Well, I must say on Sunday I was in my bikini lying in Hampstead at the ponds, which I've never done in London before. It was quite unbelievable.
All right. Well, listen, you should maybe put some pictures on social media. okay. So what are we chatting about today, Bonnie? What are the couple of companies you're looking at?
Okay, well, we're going to talk about Tethyan Resources because I do know management from in the past.
Yep.
And I feel quite confident in what they're doing. And we're going to talk about Belzone because that is one of these companies that had a massive gain last week on the exchange. And it's a bit puzzling to me. And I think, what am I missing here?
Yeah.
So we'll start off with Tethyan because they came out with some news today. Basically, they're in Serbia and the municipality of Raška has granted them use of public roads for equipment and drill rigs. And they've already completed 3 drill holes and there's 1 left to come. And so you're going to get some basically drill results by the end of June. And I think it's a good stock to keep an eye on. It only has a 6.3 million market cap. But here's an example of an AIM company raising money at progressively higher levels. So
yeah.
Their first fundraise was April 2016 at 0.38p. Then the next one they did was like in December at 2.18p. And then the last raise, they just did 1 million at 4.5p. So the shareholders who basically invest in this on a fundraising area have progressively made money on the stock. And I think at a 6.3 million market cap, I mean, it's still very early days. But as I said, I feel very confident in management because they've had previous success. And Serbia is a very interesting place to be at the moment, especially in the Tethyan Belt, if you've seen all the activity that has gone on there in recent days. So I would just keep an eye out for the drill results at the end of June and possibly maybe even take a small position prior to the drill results in the expectation that there might be a little bit of a uplift when the drill results come out.
Yeah, well, listen, people have to do, we have to be careful about saying that because people have to do their own research, nothing on this podcast is investment advice, just information. But I understand what you're saying. If people know the stock and they've done the research. But so where are they in regards to drill results? What are these the first they've done or is it one of many they've done so far? How far along the project are they?
They've drilled very little. middle of the project. So there is some drill results that are out there. They're already also doing some geochemical trenching and looking for where they're going to start their next drill program. So as I said, it's quite early days, but these drill results that are coming out could be very interesting. Still, it doesn't make for a company or it doesn't make for a deposit by no means, because you know you have to do a lot of drilling to get any. But certainly I think it's one to keep an eye on, just because, as I said, the team has had past success before. And then the other company I'm looking at is Belzone, only on the basis of last week it had a 600% gain.
What's going on there? I sort of looked into it, well, quickly, because I had someone look at the chart of it, and I don't really know the company that well. I've heard of them, but not done much research. And I skimmed across a couple of headlines, and I couldn't understand why the rise. So can you shed any light on this rise, this phenomenal rise?
Well, I was hoping you could, because I actually have no idea why the stock went up when only news that they came out with was approval for their ferronickel project is expected to be signed by the minister soon. Like, it hasn't even been signed yet. And even when you look at sort of the feasibility studies that they've done on the nickel and the iron ore project, they even say in their interim statements, you know, the iron ore or the nickel price is close to where they need it for break even on the project. So the price isn't even, you know, viable for them right now. And on the iron ore project, I mean, the capex for the iron ore is $845 million. Wow. And this is a 28 million pound market cap. So they do have some loans that they've been getting from Hudson Global Group, but the loans have been basically providing them with nothing but working capital, and they do have money to get them through to the feasibility. But, you know, just based on the current price of iron ore and the current price of nickel, I think these projects will be very difficult to get funding, even though they say they feel quite confident about it.
And when you think of it, how big is this, the feasibility study, how big was the figures in this? Was it a big project or what?
Well, on the iron side, they had 124.2 million tons at 53.5 iron ore. So it's not like the 62% iron ore where you usually see that they usually quote as the maximum price. So it's, you know, a little bit of a lower iron ore grade, but still a decent size. And then on the nickel project part of it, they've got about 79.3 million tons at 0.69% nickel. So they're taking it, this is just you know, sort of the pre-feasibility. They're taking it right now to a DFS. But even so, finding funding for projects like this, because it's in Guinea, West Africa, can be a little bit difficult in this environment.
Yeah. I suppose this is something that maybe they haven't done anything for a while. Look at the chart there. It's been flatlining for so long. And maybe some positive news coming out of there has really sparked it off. Even though, you know, the viability of a longer-term project here may not be, not be positive looking at the figures and the fundamentals, but I mean, it's almost like one of those stocks has gone from doing nothing to showing some interest or some, you know, some work going on. Maybe that's just gone crazy because of that. Who knows? But there we are. But I certainly won't be getting involved after a rise in the share price like that, because that's crazy rise. But there we are.
But yes, incredibly.
In fact, last time I said that, though, was with Independent Energy, which is now Echo Energy. And I don't know if you saw the share price of that. It went from sort of below, you know, 1 pence, and now it's like 17 pence. And it rose like 500% in one day. And I said, I'm not getting involved in that. And it kept rising and rising and rising and rising. So, you know, it's not the first time I've said that and made a bad call. In fact, and there'll be many more as well. So there we go. Bonnie, thanks very much. Have a nice Tuesday. And we'll speak next week.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list, which is Petroneft, PTR, submitted by Afsal. Don't forget, this is just information, not intended as investment advice. What does the company do? Producing oil and gas assets. So share price, 2.05 pence. Market cap, 40 million. Shares in issue, 707 million. Revenue and profit. For the 6 months ended the 30th of June 2016, the loss for the period was $2.3 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? For that period as well, 30th of June 2016, they had 308 $382,000 in cash. That's dollars, obviously US dollars. And as far as debt is concerned, in March 2016, All India, their JV partner, agreed to provide 100% of the funding required to carry out the agreed work on programs at License 61 in 2016 and 2017. This work program is expected to require gross funding of at least $35 million US, US $10 million in 2016, and $25 million in 2017. The funding is to be provided by way of unsecured loans to the joint venture company World Ace Investments Limited. This loan agreement for 2016, requirement of $10 million, was executed on March 2016, and the funding fully drawn down by July. It is expected that the loan agreement for the 2017 requirement will be executed on substantially similar terms in late 2016. So you can assume there they've drawn down $35 million, as it says there. And that's between them and their JV partner, Oil India. So list three reasons why someone should add them to their Vox Markets watchlist. Number one, fully funded with $25 million to drill S375 well, which is a 2 kilometer step-out drill and is imminent. Reason two, existing production of 2,500 barrels of oil per day and increasing. And reason three, a director holding of 29% shares in the company. And didn't say what the actual revenue there was, but let's just check it out. If I go to the balance sheet here. So revenue was $1.3 million. That's to 6 months, ended at the 30th of June. All right, that's it. Time for top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Ascent Resources, AST, it's always there. At four, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, Coppel. Coppel, feel that. COPL. At three, Anglesey Mining, AYM. At two, Sirius Petroleum. Are you serious? Yes, I am. Petroleum. That's SRSP. And number one, I don't think it's ever been there before, a new entry into number one spot. It's Great Western Mining Corporation, or GWMO. And I think that was a big riser, wasn't it? Let me just check that out. GWMO. I think it was yesterday. And you normally get this when you have a big riser. And a lot of people follow it. It's a strategy, I suppose. Okay, our top five most liked RSS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Echo Energy. Echo is a ticker. Completion of £10 million subscription. At four, Sirius Petroleum. Are you serious? Yes, I am. Petroleum. SRSP, statement repressed comment. And that's about BP. At three, Metal Tiger. MTR, Botswana Copper Silver Project T3 Project Progress Update. At two, Ascent Resources, AST, results of AGM. And number one most liked RNS in the last 24 hours was from 88 Energy, or 88E, ticker, Icewine 2 Operations Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.